Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I'm a resident. This is episode 228 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, I'm going to be introducing a new curriculum that is going to be in parts and hopefully should be completed pretty soon. It's what I call the CLEAN SP curriculum. So CLEAN SP curriculum. Basically, it's just an acronym I kind of created to address some changes that are coming with the USMLE in like May 2020, especially for step one, and June and July of 2020 for step two CK. So I'm just trying to, you know, be prepared for that because we're essentially in April. So it's kind of coming on us pretty soon. But basically, if you go on the USMLE website, you look on the announcements, they actually posted this on the 5th of November last year. And a lot of people have been talking this stuff up on Reddit. So I guess I figured I might as well make podcasts that will position people very well to tackle the vast majority of the questions they'll see on these topics. But basically, the USMLE says that that they will start including questions that assess system-based practices, patient safety, communication skills, legal and ethical skills, and professionalism. And essentially, they said for step one, in May 2020, they will start having additional questions that assess communication skills. And then in June, July 2020, Step 2 CK will include additional questions on systems-based practice, patient safety, legal, ethical issues, and professionalism. Apparently, they're not going to be making any changes to Step 3. So these are things I'm going to focus on. And in creating this podcast, I'm going to try to cover most of the information that is specifically spelled out in the USMLE content outline. So I won't be going off the reservation here. I will try to stick within the confines of the USMLE content outline. So hopefully you find this to be high yield and you find this to be helpful. And if you have any feedback, please do feel free to let me know. So what does CLEAN SP stand for? The C stands for communications, the LE stands for legal and ethical, and then the S stands for the system-based practices, and then the P stands for S is for systems-based practices, and then the P is for professionalism, right? So, you know, we'll kind of talk about those things across these series of our podcasts. So let's just jump straight into it. So I think the first topic I want to go ahead and talk about is palliative care, right? Palliative care. And the thing is, before we actually talk about palliative care, one thing that's high yield to know for exams is to kind of understand some key facts about death in the US, right? So the thing is, the leading cause of death, because again, the MBME can make these epidemiology questions on the exam. The thing is, the leading cause of death in the US, right, is heart disease, right? According to the CDC, the leading cause of death in the US is heart disease. But the thing is, the incidence has been decreasing dramatically over time, right? The incidence of cardiovascular disease has been dropping. In fact, I suspect that a time will come where cancer would overtake heart disease as the most common cause of death in the US, right? And also strokes, right? So they may not put stroke, they may put the word the $5 word for stroke. A stroke is a cerebrovascular disease. They may use that term on an MBME, right? Again, the overall trend with those things are going down, like cardiovascular disease, cerebrovascular disease, their incidence is coming down. So heart disease, number one cause of death in the US. Number two is cancer, right? Cancer is the second leading cause of death, right? And the thing is, unfortunately, there has actually been an overall trend in the increase of cancer cases in this country, right? And I mean, there are some other things that have kind of been on the upswing. So, you know, things like people dying from COPD, people dying from diabetes, you know, like metabolic diseases, as the overall BMI of the population has gone up. Alzheimer's, suicides, those things have all been on the upswing with regards to causing deaths. And one other key statistic to know, right, this will fall for sure under the purview of systems-based practices. The thing is, most healthcare spending in the U.S. is actually on chronic disease. Right? Most healthcare spending in the US is actually on chronic disease. And a lot of the healthcare spending in the US goes towards like the last few years of a person's life, right? So these are all like systemic things, like systemic problems that kind of go with US healthcare. And The thing is, palliative care should not be something that you initiate, right? Like, they could make this like a question where they put a series of statements and then you have to pick out which one is correct. The thing is, palliative care, you should actually not think of it as like care for the dying, even if yes, that's a big focus. But the thing is, if any patient has a chronic disease, very high yield to know this, if any patient has a chronic disease, you should consider palliative care to be part of like comprehensive care for those folks, right? And one good trend that has been happening in US healthcare is that patients with terminal disease, like most of there's fewer and fewer patients with terminal disease dying in the hospital. Most of them are now dying outside the hospital, right? So that means more and more people are beginning to embrace palliative care, right? So like more and more people are dying at home, more and more people are dying in the hospice. But one trend, again, this will fall under the purview of systems-based practices, is that there is more people being admitted to the ICU, like being hospitalized in the final few days, like the last 30, 60 days of life, right? That's kind of like a disturbing trend. There's like more admissions to the ICU, more hospitalizations during those periods. And the thing is, the specific number that designates that, oh, this person has a terminal illness, is if there's the expectation, right? There's the reasonable medical expectation that this person will likely not survive beyond the next 6 months, right? And the thing is, and I mean, in the next podcast, because this is just more of like an intro podcast, so I really do want to keep this short, although I want to kind of talk about some things that are pertinent to the communication skills aspect of this Clean SP curriculum that, again, the MBME is kind of like going after starting essentially next month. But basically, you want to, because people that are undergoing terminal illness, they tend to have depression. And one high yield thing to know is that the PHQ 9 questionnaire is very well validated, very good for screening for depression. And then for generalized anxiety disorder, again, you can use the GAD 7 questionnaire, right? The generalized anxiety disorder 7 questionnaire. That's something you can use, right? And the thing is, before I jump into the communications things, again, some other key principles of palliative care, right? Again, you want to avoid invasive tests. You even want to avoid painful physical exams in a person's last period of life, right? And the thing is, for the most part, palliative care really does focus on like managing a patient's symptoms, focuses on advanced care planning, focuses on like, you know, making the process of death as pleasant as possible. Even if death is not really a pleasant thing, but you can make it less unfavorable. Let's put it that way, right? With palliative care. And again, the thing is, palliative care, if a patient has like chronic illness or has like serious illness, you want to initiate palliative care sooner rather than later, right? And the thing is, one key fundamental principle of palliative care is also like having goals of care discussions on a regular basis, right? You want to have these goals of care discussions on a regular basis. Now, what if the MBME gives you a question and they say, which of the following are the biggest risk factors? Right, you know, they may give you like a bunch of things in a, you know, long ass question stem, and then they'll say, which of the following are the two biggest risk factors for a failure to initiate advanced care planning discussions? The things you want to think about are, one, just the fear of bringing the topic up, right? People don't like bring, because it's like, oh, you're talking about death in a healthcare setting, right? So one is bringing the topic up, and another big risk factor is also like keeping the discussion succinct, right? Because the thing is, physicians have this fear, especially with the way healthcare is in this country, where like you have to do things really quickly. You have only maybe like 15 minutes per patient because of insurance or reimbursement or squibbles. The thing is, essentially, people are afraid that, oh, if they start this advanced care plan discussion, the patient will have so many questions and I won't have time to get through all I need to get through in the patient encounter. So those are the two big risk factors. Now, the thing is, in terms of communication skills, right, like you want to know the process. You want to know the process of discussing having these advanced care planning discussions, right? The thing is, many of these things kind of follow a general principle where you start open-ended and then you go closed-ended at the end. I mean, this is a principle I teach people that I tutor for Step 2 CS. You always want to start open-ended, right, with general questions, right? And then after that, you then start going into the weeds. That's just a useful principle for most. In fact, that's a concept I want you to keep at the back of your mind when you're approaching MBME questions that deal with communications. If an open-ended question has not been utilized in the QSTEM. Pick an answer choice that involves using an open-ended question. If an open-ended question has been utilized in the QSTEM, then you can start veering into the realm of closed-ended questions, right? So the thing is, in general, you want to say like, oh, you know, we want to start with like, oh, this is a discussion I have with all my patients. And, you kind of, again, make it about the patient. You tell them that, oh, you're initiating this discussion with them because you want them to have a say in their care, that you don't want other people to be the ones that are making decisions for them in the end, that, you want them to have a say. You want to maintain their autonomy, right? You want them to maintain their autonomy in their care, even if they become incapacitated in a way where they may not necessarily be able to communicate their decisions. And the thing is, again, a key principle is when you're talking about these things, always start from the most, like the biggest thing, right? Like, or let's say the patient becomes unconscious, like they go into like a persistent vegetative state. That's how you ought to know. Like if a patient goes unconscious, like, kind of start like, oh, what would you want us to do under those circumstances? And then after that, you can then begin to, after you've kind of cleared out the big things, like, or if your heart were to stop, or if you were to stop breathing, you want us to put a tube down your throat. You handle those big things first. And then after that, you can then begin to go into the weeds like, do you want blood transfusions? Do you want nutrition? Do you want this? Do you want to get nutrition through an IV and stuff like that, right? Those are, again, high-yield ways to kind of go through these discussions. Now, one high-yield, this one I'm certain, again, just from going through the USMLE content outline, this is something they definitely care about. The thing is on MBM is you need to know how to break bad news to a patient. It's very important. You need to know how to break bad news to a patient. And the thing is, the mantra that you should use, because I can almost predict that when they start writing these questions, they are going to start using mnemonics that go with these communication mantras on these exams, right? You need to pick it out. Like, that's why you see for depression, I said, oh, PHQ-9 is the buzzword you want to remember. For generalized anxiety disorder, the GAT-7 mnemonic is something you want to remember. For sharing bad news, one mnemonic you want to remember is called P-spikes. Right? Many of you have, the thing is, these communication skills, whatever's, these are things that you probably learned like in your introduction to clinical medicine course or whatever. But most of those things have kind of floated out of a person's brain. So, these podcasts will hopefully help you bring that back. But there's the P spikes mantra, right? And I'll kind of give you like what P spikes means, and then I'll kind of give you examples of these things, right? So the P stands for like preparing for the discussion. Before you go into the patient's room, be prepared, right? Because the thing is, usually when these discussions are held in the presence of many family members, if you're not prepared, you won't be able to answer their questions with confidence, right? So, you want to be prepared because it's almost like hawks are going to be picking at you while you're in the room, right? Because they're going to have a lot of questions. So prepare for the discussion. And then the S means setting up the environment, right? So you want to set up a good environment. You want a place where there's privacy. You want to be in a place where like there's no like beepers or whatever that's going to disturb the patients. Usually it's good to do this like in a separate room apart from like the IC or something. And then the next P means like finding out what the patient, right? What the patient, and like the family understand. It's usually good for you to kind of assess the person's understanding of things. And the thing is, the mantra, this P spikes mantra, believe it or not, this thing is already being tested on MBME exams, right? So they usually write these as ethics questions and say, what's the next step or something? And they will give you all these series of statements and you need to pick one that agrees with these mantras. Essentially, if a part of this algorithm has been done, then you don't pick that answer. You then go to the next thing on this algorithm. So again, P is for preparation. The S is for setting. Again, set up a good environment, private environment. The P means preparing, like assessing what the patient. And so the P is for patient, right? And the family understand. And then the I is like information, right? So essentially, you essentially want to ask them, how much do you want to know? How much do you want to know, right? And then the K means the knowledge, right? So you go ahead and provide the knowledge, right? The K for knowledge. You provide that bad news, right? That you're kind of talking about. And then the E is for like emotional responses, right? So, kind of like respond to the patient's emotions because again, bad news, no one wants to hear bad news, right? So, kind of a big thing there. And then the S means sharing, right? So like next steps, you share your next steps. Like, because the thing is, when you give people bad news, one thing that almost comforts, and again, I've had this experience because I've done ICU rotations in my intern year. I did ICU rotations in my intern year. I'm no longer an intern anymore. But basically, right, families always respond very positively if at the end you have like a defined plan of care, right? So share those plans. Don't keep them in the dark so that they are not like kind of like left. Because the thing is, when you have these discussions, right, it's almost like the bottom has fallen out of their world, right? But when you provide a plan, it's almost like you're replacing the bottom into that world, right? So that's a very high yield thing. Again, high yield, just good thing to do just in clinical practice, and high yield thing to know for exams, right? So again, the P spikes, right? The preparation part, again, you kind of want to know what you're talking about. You don't want to like say, oh, I'm just going to wing this family discussion. And then let's say you don't know the patient's pertinent medical history. You don't know the diagnosis from pathology. You don't, you've not reviewed the imaging, nothing. That's not a prudent idea. Again, you want to be prepared, right? And then like the setting, again, like I said, again, go to a place where, and usually it's good to bring like the part of the nursing team for these discussions, bring like a social worker for these conversations, right? And again, bring a box of tissues, because you know there's going to be tears at these things. And then again, the next piece is like, again, like assess what the patient and family understand, right? Like, oh, what do you understand about what's going on? Again, these are sentences that your friends at the MBME can write on these exams, right? Like, what do you understand about what's going on? What do you understand about this sickness that you have? What have other healthcare practitioners told you about your illness? What do you think is going to happen, right? Just ask them these kinds of questions, you know, to kind of prepare them. And then the I for information, right? Again, you just ask them, like, how much do you want to know, right? Would you like me to tell you the details? What would you like me to talk about? What, I know it's a lot to come across, but what would you want me to focus on, right? And then the case for knowledge, right? And the thing is, you don't just like just dump the knowledge on the patient. You don't just tell them, boom, or you have this, you're going to die at this, blah, blah, blah. No, right? You have to use like an empathic statement, right? You see things like, oh, I feel bad that I have to tell you this, or unfortunately, this imaging test we did or this biopsy we did show this. I'm afraid this news is not very great. You know, you kind of have some intro statements, kind of preparing them for the inevitable, right? And then the E, right? Again, like empathy, right? I don't think I mentioned this when I mentioned, I think I did P speaks. I skipped the E. The E stands for empathy, right? So the thing is, again, like acknowledge the family's emotions, right? You know, give them time to respond. Don't just keep talking. No, right? You should have like a pause. This is something high yield actually to do for step 2 CS. When a patient starts crying or something, have a pause, right? Hold their hands, have a pause. That tells them that you're acknowledging their emotions, right? You know, kind of give them time to respond. Tell the patient that you're there for them. You're not going to abandon them, right? Again, I know this must be hard information for you to hear. Tell me how you're feeling. I'll do whatever I can to support you, stuff like that, right? And again, the S, right? Again, where you kind of share, you summarize. And then you kind of talk about next steps, right? You kind of talk about next steps. Again, these are just all high yield things to know with regards to sharing bad news. And with regards to advanced directives, right? So there are actually two types of advanced directives. So this is me going into the more formal part of things now, right? So the advanced directives, right? So the first one is a living will, right? Living will is essentially like literally like something that a person does while they're like, you know, like coherent and everything. And you know, you essentially in the living will, you give like very specific directions, very specific decisions that could direct like the care of a patient, right? Like what should happen in different scenarios, what kinds of interventions can be done, can they get intubated, can they get nutrition through an IV, and all those things. Those things are clearly spelled out in a living will. Now, the second thing is, second kind of advanced directive is a healthcare proxy, right? This is something that's also known as a durable power of attorney on MBMEs, right? Essentially, this is a person that the patient designates to make healthcare decisions. And the thing is, you can use either a living will, or you can use a healthcare proxy, or you can use both. But it's very high yield to know for exams. Again, with all these things that the MBME put in their content outline, it's very high yield to know for exams that if you're using both, you need to indicate that, oh, you know, if let's say the healthcare, like the living will says this and the healthcare proxy says this, you need to decide as the patient which one will take precedence if both of those advanced care directive modalities clash with each other, right? That's a very high yield important thing to know. So since I'm coming up on 20 minutes, I think I'm going to go ahead and pause here. Again, as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams, step 1, step 2 CK, step 2 CS, step 3, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. I tutor medicine res. If you're a medicine resident or a PEDS resident for like the in-training exam, the board exams for those specialties, I tutor for those. I offer 20-hour booster courses for step 1, step 2, CK, and step 3. Again, I review the must knows for those exams in a Q&A format. I use a lot of clinical vignettes and I integrate across multiple disciplines. Those things tend to be pretty good at picking out people's weaknesses and turning them into strengths. And then I also do like this longitudinal tutoring where, again, if you're starting out med school as a, you know, fresh first year or starting out third year as a fresh, like third year med student, I tutor you for all your like your block exams or your shelf exams. And as I'm doing that, I'm laying a solid base of like a solid foundation with regards to knowledge and test taking strategy as I take you through those things. And then if you med student applying to residency, so like an ERASAP, or a college student applying to med school, so like an AMCASAP, again, I offer like consulting and coaching for these things, like rec letters, personal statements, editing applications, mock interviews for many different specialties. Again, the vast majority of people I've worked with have all pretty much all matched at their first choices. And again, I've helped people with tricky applications like low scores. Graduated from med school 10 years ago. I've worked with many people that have had tricky application circumstances, like no research or whatever, right? And they've matched, right? So if these are conditions you face, you know, just kind of let me know. And please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts, it's on Spotify, it's on Google Play. And I also have, you know, the WordPress website. Please subscribe. And then thank you for all those that are subscribing to the YouTube channel. Please subscribe as well. It's called A Divine Intervention, USMLE Podcasts and Videos. And if you have a college buddy that needs tutoring for like any of the MCAT subjects, I tutor for all those things. Or even most college pre-med subjects, I tutor for those things. And then my life lesson for today is to just be patient, right? Be patient, right? The thing is, many people, right, they want to get things immediately, right? I feel like in this current world, we live in a kind of like a drive-through mentality, right? Where we want something right now. We want something immediately. But one thing I've noticed is whenever you are patient, you tend to get the best. But if you kind of rush things, you tend to get second fiddle, right? You get less than what is best, right? So the thing is, it's important, as the Bible says, right? Be long-suffering, be patient, right? Be gentle, be patient. Patience is a very important skill. Like literally, patience is a virtue. Patience is a virtue. A person that is patient, again, will typically assess a situation and essentially almost always make the right decision amongst many competing decisions that could lead to very deleterious circumstances. So again, be patient. Patience is a virtue. Like when you're patient, you tend to make higher quality decisions. So thank you for listening to this podcast. God bless you. I'll see you next time. Thank you.